realize this is kind of spooky lighting. I'm keeping my shutters closed because it's going to be like a really hot day today. But if you just give me a second, like, this is way too spooky for me. So I'm going to go open my shutters. That's a bit better. Thank you. Anyway, it's really nice to see you all. And I'm really looking forward to seeing or actually experiencing your physical presence. I think that will be really special. So until then, we'll keep on doing this. So I decided to do this I guess it's a Dharma talk, but it's not really a Dharma talk. It's an informal talk because it's I wanted to have a chance for people to break into small discussion groups to actually discuss their experience of work during the pandemic. That's sort of the topic of my talk today. There we go. I'm just going to set my timer. And I've been thinking a lot about work lately. Maybe you have too. And I've actually thought about work for quite a long time, probably because it takes up so much of my time and my energy. That's my paid work. And around 5 years ago, I even facilitated a series of study and talk sessions that explored the idea of bringing Buddhist practice to work. But as you know, work has changed a lot since then, especially in the last 15 months. And of course, there will be another change for many soon as we return to normal, whatever that is. Big area of uncertainty for me, for sure. And I've been trying to think of how some of the things I learned during the discussion groups that I had a few years ago might apply to the work situations that have been altered for many of us. My sense is that the pandemic has not only shifted how we do our work, but how we experience our work. For many, it's been a time of great difficulty, financially, emotionally, and physically. And I realize that I speak about this from a position of great privilege, living as I do in North America and having benefited from higher education and you know, having the skills to get a well-paying job with a pension. And anyway, so I hold that in my mind as well. But for many, or for some people, there have been silver linings to the work during the pandemic. And for me, one of those has been getting to know more of my neighbors and their dogs. And so that's been really great, aside from many other benefits. In our practice, times of upheaval and great difficulty are sometimes called Dharma gates, because the difficulty can turn our attention to things we don't usually consider. Shifting our focus, we learn new things about our world and ourselves. A gate is, after all, what you have to go through to get from one place to another. When we talk about Dharma gates, there's a sense of moving from a life of suffering, unease, and dissatisfaction to one of peace, contentment, and joy. And this leads me to the central question this morning, which is, are you able to see your work as a Dharma talk, as a Dharma gate? And if so, how? Or if not, can you think of how it might be? So maybe you can hold this question lightly as I share a few stories and reflect on what it's meant for me. And of course, at the end of the talk, I'd like to have an opportunity for you to share your experience of work in the past several months. So work has been on the Buddhist radar since the time of the Buddha. I'm not sure it's the first time he talked about work, but the Buddha identified right livelihood as one of the essential steps on the Eightfold Path to liberation and joy. In these early teachings, we learn that the eight practical steps involve actions of insight, morality, and mental cultivation. The Buddha taught that by practicing the Eightfold Path, we can bring peace to our hearts, cultivate equanimity, and foster a warm connection to the world. Traditionally, the practice of right livelihood meant doing work that did not result in harm, did not involve goods procured dishonestly, and does not promote ill will. It's still good advice, but we have to recognize there are limits to achieving the perfect right livelihood in our complex and imperfect world. After all, even organic farmers harm insects and microorganisms in the soil through their work. Plus, not everyone has the ability to choose the perfect form of right livelihood. And it may be that only those people with the education, social skills, and marketable experience can get closer to achieving that. In a bit of a contrast to these traditional ideas of right livelihood, some later Buddhist teachers have tried to make right or tried to take right versus not so right livelihood out of the question. The aim was to move from an idea which ranks work on a scale of spiritual acceptability to one where we look at ways of being more aware of what we're doing as we work. And we looked at a couple of books to guide us, namely Sharon Salzberg's Real Happiness at Work and Lou Richman's Work as a Spiritual Practice. There was a paragraph in Sharon Salzberg's book that I now appreciate even more because of how the pandemic has, for many people, more problematic than usual. She says, we can come to understand work problems as a potential source of achieving greater clarity rather than as obstacles without redeeming value, and begin to recognize the true potential of the challenges that work brings our way. Although many people experience work as a burden or worse, it is also a place where we can learn and grow and come to be much happier. In the words of another teacher, maybe problems arise at work not as simply interruptions or intrusions, but as invitations to gain real wisdom. So this perspective on work is a little bit more nuanced than the good work versus not so good work. And in our discussions during the workshops a few years ago, it felt more helpful when dealing with today's complex work world. Practical techniques such as integrating moments of mindfulness into everyday work were offered, and we go off and try to integrate those and return to our groups to discuss them. So work itself becomes an opportunity to transcend our habit patterns of reactivity, to act with greater care for ourselves and others. So what about work in Soto Zen practice? If you've been around for a while, you know work is a pretty big deal in our tradition. For some teachers, it's even more important than Zazen. You may have heard the story of Baijong, who stopped eating when his students, concerned with him working at an advanced age, hid his tools. When the students asked Baijong why he stopped eating, he said, "A day without work is a day without eating." For him, work was an essential and one of the most important practices in Zen, because it expressed a straightforward fundamental truth that required an equivalent response. Since Buddhism had moved north from India, there was no tradition of people supporting monks. So a monk's work was essential to staying alive and practicing in this new culture. There was no deep mystical association between work and enlightenment. The work was, by its simplicity and unsentimental response to conditions, itself an enlightened act. Nothing fancy. You just do what supports life, and as a result, continue practice. When we do work practice at our sesshin, or sweep the zendo after a sit, we don't fret about perfection or make a big deal of it. It's just something that we do to support practice for ourselves and others. So the idea that a day without work means a day without eating, I think, can be seen in a broad sense, in that we work to support the things that nourish us, or nourish our lives and practice. These days in North America, most of us get enough food to support our bodies. So maybe we can think about work as something that nourishes not only our body, but also our minds and our hearts. Maybe it's not just running a farm to grow your own vegetables, but learning how to weave, because creating beautiful things feeds your spirit. So, I think we have to think a bit more broadly about the idea of work. There's an idea in Zen that taking care of things that need taking care of is at least as important or more important than Zazen. And in fact, the depth of Zazen comes from seeing that everything is Zazen. Being wholehearted in all your activities on and off the cushion is Zazen. This is why during our residential retreats and at Zen monasteries, we do samu, or work practice, every day. Yes, maybe we need to have clean floors and toilets, and it's seen as a very important part of monastic training. Apparently, at Eheiji, the monks spend more time cooking, raking the gardens, and sweeping the long, long hallways than they do sitting zazen. Work practice can be considered the manifestation of wisdom when you realize that it is just another type of meditation. For example, being tenzo, or head cook, is a work position during sesshin, and an important work position because you're feeding all the monks and practitioners. Anyway, being tenzo is not just work, it is zazen. So zazen is practice, work is practice, so work is zazen. Learning how to work straightforwardly, efficiently, and with a minimum of fuss is just good, solid Zen practice. Whatever kind of work we do, this is the way to do it. We don't worry about fast or slow, whether we're looking good, coming up with a great product. We throw away self-interest and just engage in the task, moment by moment. It might be a total failure, but we can respond with, "Okay, now on to the next thing." Just do one thing and then the next. During our work, we practice silence, mindfulness, and awareness of the body. If we're working with other people during a retreat, maybe we can get the feeling of the rhythm of our shared activity, which can be both peaceful and beautiful. So maybe Samu is the most important thing to learn in Zen practice, because once you have that feeling, you can take Zazen or make Zazen part of any activity in your daily life. You can even bring it into simply taking care of things in your own home, engaging in your creative practices, or engaging in any kind of activity. But we know that some work that we do in our day-to-day life is not quite so simple. We might have to engage in difficult negotiations, solve complex problems, or be in situations of conflict. Even at those times, we can try to remember to take moments here or there to pay attention to our breath and body. So when you walk to the washroom, which if you work full time, you probably have to do once or twice during the day, you can pay attention to your legs moving as you go in the direction of the toilet. You can feel your arms swinging. When you walk through the door to your office, maybe you can touch the door frame to remind you of the transition from one space into another. Or pay attention to which foot you place inside the office first. When you sit at the desk, you can really feel the weight of your body as you sit in the chair. And you can try taking a breath before turning on your computer monitor, saying, "Now I am taking a breath, and now I will begin work." Even that moment of attention can bring you back to full awareness. In one of his talks, Norman suggests that work can be a gateway to awareness of our true selves. He says that when we pay attention, we see that our work is just a cover story. We know our jobs are not who we really are. Our ideas about the value of our job, or other people's ideas about the value of our job, are just that, ideas, stories. He says, our real work is being bodhisattvas, doing the task that needs to be done with full attention and a sense of wholeheartedness. So maybe we're not able to engage in a practice like taking care of the sick or working as an organic farmer. Maybe we're making safety pins, but people need safety pins. So we can take heart in knowing that we're serving a real need and we do our work with care. Bodhisattvas know the road is infinitely long and only going in one direction, to universal awakening. So when bodhisattvas feel fatigue or discouragement at their work, these are just the usual human feelings, they say, "Oh yes, that too. That's the feeling, and it's not fun, but I know what to do and how to straighten out, and I'll keep walking down this long, lovely bodhisattva path." So those are a few traditional ideas about Buddhism and work. It's a bit harder to connect all of these ideas to what we've been going through in our work lives over the past 15 months. But I'll start just by describing a bit of my story of work during the pandemic. I work as an urban planner for the city of Delta and have done so for over 20 years. At the start of the pandemic lockdown, my work life was fraught with anxiety because of all the uncertainty that came with the pandemic. One day around the middle of March 2020, my coworkers and I were told that information services would be providing everyone with remote access to the city's internal computer network, and that we would work from home. The assumption being, of course, that we all had the equipment to do so. The laptops, the mice, the monitors. I have a 10-year-old laptop, so fortunately it's lasted all that time, so yay laptop. It's a pretty big change in any case, to go from being an organization that interacts with the public almost continuously, and that involves a lot of interaction among coworkers, to a situation filled with way less contact and much more uncertainty. Many of us, especially the newly hired people, were worried about retaining jobs because it was assumed that with things shutting down, demand for services and development activity would slow or stop. That totally wasn't the case, which is, I still find very weird, but there you go. So this, along with needing to learn a lot of new technology for working remotely, conducting meetings, interacting with colleagues, and doing public consultation, has made things pretty stressful. And at the same time, we also became acutely aware of how many people actually lost their jobs or who had businesses that struggled and possibly failed. We also appreciated even more the stresses and risks that healthcare workers, grocery store workers, and other frontline workers faced. However, those of us lucky enough to face less difficult circumstances in living our privileged lives in the first world still felt pretty fortunate. It allowed some of us to consider work in a different light, with a heightened awareness of how temporary and fragile our lives can be. And of course, for some of us, we began to see that our work was not just the place that we went to every day to earn money, that our work was broader. It was about feeding ourselves in ways that were not, my alarm just went off. Who knows? Our work was not just the place we went to every day to make our money, and then we come home and we eat and we sleep. Our work was broader. It was about meeting the neighbors. It was about, cooking more healthy food. It was about returning to the cushion, despite the fact that we have to practice virtually without meeting our lovely Sangha members. And really taking care of that part of our lives too. And who knows if we would have gained those new perspectives without the enormity of a pandemic. So quite a few of my workers left to pursue jobs in other cities as their complacency was shaken by all that had happened during the pandemic. Others left work altogether to take time off with the idea of re-entering the workforce in a few months. A few colleagues have retired, and I too have been thinking about retirement and what that might look like for me. And now that many of us have come to appreciate working from home, we're contemplating another big change, and whether and why would we want to return to work as normal. I'm really questioning that. I'm struggling with that. So the response to all of this change and uncertainty has truly shifted the attention and has made me question whether work feels like a lot of those traditional definitions. Right livelihood, which is the Eightfold Path, cultivation of insight, morality, and calm. Whether I can bring greater consciousness to work, learn techniques to practice equanimity and transcend the stress. Whether the work is actually nourishing, physically, emotionally, and mentally. Whether I can drop the swirl of worries and stories I tell myself about work and find other ways to simply engage in the task at hand. And whether I can feel how simple, wholehearted engagement is a bodhisattva practice in itself. So I'm not going to provide any answers, mainly because I don't have any. What I would like to do, though, is allow you the opportunity to talk about your work experience, whether that's paid work or the other activity that feeds or nourishes you, and how you feel about a return to normal. What does that look like for you? So that is about all I want to talk about. And I think hopefully that leaves us with a good amount of time to chat and really reflect on our experience and explore the topic a little bit more. Thank you for your kind attention and for entertaining the idea of a discussion group on a Sunday, which is not something we usually do on a Sunday. So Kate and Michael will send us into breakout rooms so we can be in smaller groups to talk. And as is our usual practice, each person will take about, 5 minutes. Three to four. Maybe you can choose a timekeeper in your group to reflect on the questions that I'll share with you when I'm finished talking about the discussion groups. When each person is talking, just listen carefully without evaluating or silently comparing it to your own experience. If there's time left in the 5 minutes, you can just sit silently, or the 4 minutes. You can just sit silently because sometimes the speaker will have an afterthought or not. That's okay too. And please keep in mind that anything that's said in the group stays in the group, and you don't talk about it to anyone else, including the speaker, after the exercise is complete. It should feel like a safe place to express yourself. And of course, if people don't feel comfortable doing this, you can sign out or not join the group. We'll leave it up to you. So here are a few questions you might want to reflect on. What changes have happened in your work life in the past 15 months and will possibly change as we move towards normal? How have you responded to these changes? And is there a practice, a phrase, or any other teaching, perhaps from Zen tradition, that has helped you or could help you at your work? So, changes in your work life, your response, and any practices or teachings that have helped you. So take it away, Kate and Michael.